everybody, and welcome back to the Drive Pink Dialogue, episode number 21. It's Monday night. Tonight, we're going to be talking about Inter Miami's 2-2 draw to the Colorado Rapids. I watched the game live about 48 hours ago. Soar watched it about 4 minutes ago. He's going to have an emotional reaction. I'm going to come with all the notes. But before we do all of that, how are you feeling today, man?
Not good, man. What have I just watched? I'm going to have a very raw reaction today. So apologies for the listeners if it's not what you're expecting, or if you guys have digested the result. I'm still digesting it. It was awful, man. Awful game.
I feel like the last four games have all been bad vibes. And it's a good thing that we haven't done the post-game show immediately after, because we would have been a lot harsher and a lot more rude. I did try and put some things in there to be a little more positive in this rundown, because I know you're going to bring the negativity. But let's start with some positivity. And I want to talk about the young kids in the Inter Miami program for a minute, because they had a big week. The Generation Adidas Cup was last week, and Inter Miami's under 17 team went to the I think they made just the championship of the consolation bracket, so they did really well. And then the under 15 lost in the quarterfinals to Valencia in the champions bracket. So a pretty good showing. And listen, I don't know any of the kids at any of those ages, but I guess a couple of them like really stood out and impressed a lot of people. So it seems like just more talent coming through the pipeline at the younger ages. South Florida is a talent-rich area, at least for all the other sports. So I'm assuming soccer is no different. I also want to talk about the B team, but any thoughts on the youngsters?
Yeah, I think we're just, as you said, producing this pool of talent that's really coming up. Obviously, we've seen some of them transition into that first team and is really showing. And the future is bright. I think there's so much potential here in terms of our academy, in terms of our B team. And I'm very excited to see the youngsters coming up, and hopefully maybe next season or in a couple of seasons, we can see some of them get some minutes in that first team. But overall, fantastic job by the management to make sure that the academy is creating these stars and putting out these good youngsters out in terms of their experience and stuff.
Yeah. Speaking of the youngsters, I've been trying to follow the B team a little bit more in this this season. They were pretty hard to watch last year, but this season they're a little bit better. I watched 30 minutes of the B team on Sunday. They played Nashville's B team, and they got a win, 2-1 win. It's their best start in Inter Miami 2 history, Fort Lauderdale CF history, whatever you want to call it. I think they've got 3 wins and a draw in their first 4 games. There are some really exciting players at that level, and there's no room for them on the A team this year, but we might get them in a few cameos. And it feels like there's a couple guys that we're going to see on the first team over the next 2 or 3 years, and that's really exciting. They were really bad last year, and so virtually all the attacking players got very little service and couldn't do much, but it feels like they're a lot better this year, and some of those attacking players are going to get a little more service, and we'll be able to impress a little more. So all around, through the B team down, it's a great week for Inter Miami's program as a whole, and so the future is bright.
And then there's the main roster that's absolutely doing nothing. Jesus.
Okay, let's talk about the game. Let's go into the pregame. Let's talk about the pregame, because we expected heavy rotation, and that's exactly what we got. You know, we had the big Monterrey game last Wednesday. We had the big Monterrey game in 48 hours from now. It was a game that we knew we weren't going to be able to put our all into. We had some guys coming back from injury. We had some guys that had played a lot of games in a row and needed a rest. And so the primary goal of this game was to make sure that we were healthy and at full strength going into Wednesday. And if we got the result we wanted, that would be awesome. But if not, it's okay. At least that's how we felt going into the game. We'll get into how we felt at the end of the game, but talk to me about the lineup. Lots of newcomers. Toto Aviles playing as a CDM. That was tough. Franco Negri making a season debut. That was much better. So give me your overall thoughts on the lineup now that you know had a chance to digest the game.
When I first saw the lineup, my reaction was Tata's throwing this game. Essentially, we've prepared ourselves for the Monterrey game. We're going to give some of our main stars a run out in maybe the 60th minute. And this team didn't seem to have been lined up in order to win the game, maybe get a draw. But with Bojalin in the starting 11 on the right wing, Aviles in the center, which I know we talked about whether that's a issue in terms of the graphics that was created or whether that's, you know, maybe he is playing in that number six, and he was playing in that number six. So interesting stuff all around. It was good to see Franco Negri going the full 90 minutes, but we agreed that that midfield of Sunderland, Julian Gressel and Thomas Aviles was not enough to control the game. And we thought that this wasn't going to be a game that Inter Miami is going out to go win. For the first 20 minutes, the game played out exactly how I thought it would. And I'm sure we'll get into it. But in terms of the lineup, it seemed like we were just playing either for a draw or not to have any of our main stars injured.
Yeah, obviously Drake Callender is your number one goalkeeper. And, you know, even though Leo Campana is not your number one striker, you feel confident with him as a striker. But I'm looking at everywhere else on this rotation or in this lineup. Ryan Saylor and Noah Allen are certainly your B team center backs. Franco Negri making his first start of the season. Leo Alfonso just gets signed to a first team contract. Schneider Borgelin never played on the right wing before in a professional game. David Ruiz playing out of position. Toto Avila's playing out of position. Lawson Sunderland, probably your seventh or eighth midfielder on your roster. So it was a tough roster to look at. Obviously, the bench looked really good, though. So that was nice. And it did have a big impact in this game. So why don't we get into it? And the first thing I want to talk about was first 10 minutes. Like you said, we weren't in control of the game. It played out in a way that you kind of would expect from a Colorado A team versus our B, B minus team. But there was two moments in the first 10 minutes. David Ruiz has a near penalty in the eighth minute. On replay, I think it should have been called as a penalty. You think he got really lucky there? And then in the 10th minute, just 2 minutes later, he makes a last-man tackle on Cabral. Fortunately, he misses the ball, but he also misses the man, and he gets really lucky there because that could have been not just a foul, but a red card, dog-so penalty. So within the first 10 minutes, two David Ruiz plays that really, really scared you. This coming off the red card against Monterrey. What were your thoughts right then?
I literally wrote down David Ruiz living on the edge with two dangerous tackles. And I was 100% sure this boy is out to get a red card again in the first 20 minutes. The way he was playing, he was obviously trying to redeem himself from that first, from the red card that he got again in the last game. He was trying to make up for that, played with a lot of fire to start with, but it was a bit reckless. He was a bit all over the place. And there was just no need to go down in the box when he did. Thankfully, it didn't amount to anything, but I agree with you. That could have been a penalty to start with, and we got away with one for sure.
The first 15 minutes or so, 15, 20 minutes, it felt like Colorado was in control of the game, but this lineup did get settled in. They held strong defensively other than those two moments with David Ruiz, and it felt like they started to build themselves into the game. Specifically, Julian Gressel, I thought, did a really good job of controlling the game for Inter Miami, and we'll talk about him later when we get to awards. But and he had a nice moment in the 35th minute. He takes a shot from 28 yards out that would have been a banger if he was able to keep it on target, but it just kind of swerved off path. But I think there was a narrow margin between Stefan and the woodwork to put that in if he could get it there. 41st minute, Leo Campana gets injured. He comes off. Deo Gomez comes on. Didn't seem like a huge moment at the time, but it was an injury to a team that's had a lot of injuries. And more importantly, it forced Inter Miami to make a substitute in the 41st minute. You know, we wanted Deo Gomez to get some time off, and he got 40 minutes off. So it didn't feel at the moment like it was going to be a huge game-changing moment. But, well, we'll come back to it, but I think it really became one. And so I wanted to point it out. But then 44th minute, Cabral makes a run into the box. Ryan Saylor makes a slide tackle, clear penalty. A minute later, Rafael Navarro converts the pen, and Colorado goes up 1-0 at the halftime. when it didn't feel like they deserved a lead. But maybe you can tell me your thoughts on that first half.
Yeah, just with that, with regards to that penalty, there was just no need to go down in the box at the time. I think Ryan Saylor just panicked. He thought he lost his man, but the attacker wasn't going anywhere as such. So I was disappointed for him going down. Definitely a clear penalty. He got juked out and then slid in, didn't get the ball, got the man. Very, very unfortunate to have gone down at the end of the half, because I thought we survived that first 20-minute barrage that Colorado put up against us. When we were talking in the pregame, we knew that Inter Miami has started slowly in most of their games, and we knew that this team is not capable of controlling the games. So I knew that this was how it was going to play out. Colorado was really going in for the press, getting the turnovers. We had absolutely zero ball control in the midfield. We were passing completely wayward. It was just all over the place in the first 20 minutes. And then we started getting control of the ball. It became a lot better. It felt like the new players had started to build their chemistry, understanding the right positions, getting into the right places. So it started to get a lot better. And when we got to the 45-minute mark, I thought, okay, this is the perfect way to end the half, because we've done exactly what we wanted to do. Keep the scoreline goalless till we get our big stars on, and then maybe we can go and win this game. So to concede right at the death, it was really, really disappointing. We had a couple of half chances towards the end of that half to maybe convert something. But overall, Colorado didn't threaten as such. So just to give them away that penalty and give them away that goal was very disappointing. And just for the listeners, want to apologize for my voice being a little bit flat today, because I've had a wild weekend. So hope you can cope with that.
Moving on to the second half, everything changes seemingly because Lionel Messi comes on, Lawson Sunderland comes off. I point that out because this is Inter Miami's second substitute, and there is a point I'm going to come to. But right at halftime, Inter Miami's already used two substitutes. First moment, Cole Bassett has a really nice shot on goal in the 48th minute, and Drake Callender has to make a really nice save. I don't know if we're going to talk about Drake Callender later, so I wanted to point this out. He seemingly has a save like this, you know, every week, if not every game. And so this was that one. It was really nice. Moving forward to the 56th minute, Marcelo Wiegand comes on and Sergio Busquets comes on. Gressel and Aviles comes off. And this feels like you've now achieved the rotation you wanted, where Aviles and Gressel are the two main starters that you're going to start on Wednesday. So you get them 55, 56 minutes, but then you get them off. They don't go 90. They're going to feel good and they're going to be fresh for Wednesday. But you've now used four substitutes and it's only the 56th minute. Seemingly, though, it does make an instant impact. Just 1 minute later, Franco Negrip has a transition opportunity down the left side. With that left-footer connection, he crosses it to Lionel Messi, who on the first touch bangs it off the woodwork towards the other woodwork, but at the right angle to put it in. Inter Miami ties the game 1-1, 57th minute.
Fantastic goal. We've seen Messi do that time and time again, just float around the edge of that box. That cutback comes in, it's like a sharpshooter. Every time he hits that ball, it's bound to hit in the direction of the goal. So beautifully worked goal. And honestly, that second half started a little bit shaky with Bassett having that try on goal. But I thought the two points I want to make. First, I think Bojelin moving to the center kind of worked because he was being ineffective in the right wing. So him being central sort of changed the chemistry a little bit and the balance in favor of Inter Miami. And then obviously Messi coming on just completely changed the dynamic of the game. And I texted you at the time and I was like, I forgot what a difference this player makes on this team. It was just transformative, not just for him in the midfield, but everybody around him seemed to have raised their game, which is definitely something that we've sorely missed. And I hope he can stay healthy for the long term, because boy, are we going to need him.
Yeah. We're going to talk about Messi, I am sure, as we get into awards. So I will save my thoughts until then. because almost immediately after that goal, we get a second goal, another transition opportunity. Messi pushes the ball forward to David Ruiz, who crosses it back into the middle for Leo Afonso, who's making his first career start as a professional soccer player, and he gets a goal. Huge celebration, very amped up. It feels like Inter Miami's about to win the game 4-1. It's all vibes, and you can tell, just it's so obvious the impact that not just Messi makes, but how everyone else plays to another level when he's on the field. I don't understand why that's the case. We'll dive into it a little bit later. But second goal, thoughts. Leo Afonso.
Oof. Right place at the right time. Honestly, Diego Gomez, I think, was in front of him or behind him and could have also tapped that in. But Leo Afonso, fantastic. Very happy for him for getting that goal. I think he had a good performance. He was quite decent. And to get on that score sheet, again, all the work comes in from Messi running into that final third, because what difference that we saw in that second half was Messi was just taking control. He came as far back as the, you know, behind the center circle, taking the ball, running with it, and everybody behind him, the defenders of the opposition, just keep pushing back, pushing back, pushing back, because they're afraid to be beaten by Messi. And what that does is that gives a lot of our players space to move up as well. He pops it off to David Ruiz. Brilliant pass by David Ruiz. Great vision from him. And yeah, fantastic finish as well, because it's very easy in that angle to just pop it over. But great. Very happy for Leo Afonso. 100% coming. At this point, I thought we would absolutely win this game 4-1.
Yeah, we talked about in the pregame how we should probably think about this as two different games, the game before the substitutes come on and the game after the substitutes come on. And it felt like exactly that, where the entire game had transformed and Inter Miami in the second game was just going to crush Colorado. And that's exactly how it felt. That goal came in the 60th minute. They had another big chance in the 70th minute. Chelo Wiegand has like a nice header, a nice touch off his head that sets him up for an opportunity, saved by Zach Steffen. Lionel Messi had a great chance in the 78th minute, also saved by Zach Steffen. So it was coming. It felt like that third goal was coming and we were going to put the game away and it was all going to be good. But just to make note of this and to continue with the theme, in the 69th minute, Leo Afonso, the goal scorer, comes out with an injury. And to me, this was like the biggest moment of the game as far as us not winning, because we have to take our left winger off. Our only option is Jordi Alba, I guess. We don't have any forwards on the bench. So you use your fifth substitute in the 69th minute. You only have a one goal lead. Your now left winger is not actually a left winger. Your now striker is Schneider Bojalin, who isn't the guy you want on when you need a goal, by himself at least. And you have Luis Suarez on the bench. And Kramaski doesn't get a chance to play in this game. So all five substitutes used in the 69th minute. Franco Negri was going to need a sub at some point because he was tired by the end. Still, it felt like the goal was coming. 82nd minute, we get our last real chance. But 85th minute, there's a transition opportunity for Colorado where Sam Vines gets on the end of a ball, puts a shot just wide. But it felt like a tide-turning moment. He was also called offsides. And I wonder if him being called offsides sort of made it feel not real for the Inter-Miami players, because all of a sudden, Colorado, after being beaten up for 35 minutes in the second half, is in control. They're doing exactly what they want to do in transition, have plenty of attacking players on the field. Talk to me about how you're feeling in that moment. Still 2-1, but it feels like there's a goal for them if they can make it happen.
I was still not as worried. I know Inter Miami has it in them to kind of shut off in moments during the game, which can cause a transition from the other team. And I thought that we'd be able to score first because we were so close that I didn't think a second Colorado goal would have that much of an effect. Boy, I was wrong. When that goal came, it was a sucker punch and a half.
Yeah, we will talk about the tactics in a few minutes, but certainly that felt like the moment where Inter Miami needed to say, okay, the third goal doesn't matter. Preventing this second goal matters a lot more. And I think they had another opportunity in the 86th minute. And then in the 88th minute, Harris gets a ball in transition. Marcelo Wiegand is way too far forward. Franco Negri is also too far forward, although I'll give him a little bit of respite because he is exhausted and he probably wasn't expecting to go 90 minutes in this game. Transition opportunity. Harris puts the ball forward to Cole Bassett. Sergio Busquets can't keep up with the runner coming out of the midfield, like we've talked about all season. And Cole Bassett puts it away. 2-2, 88th minute. And it feels like it was just such bad vibes. It was such a bad feeling. And this has been happening for three straight games now four. So frustrating. We don't get a good feeling. We don't get those happy vibes. And it would have been so good if we could just escape with that 2-1 victory. And yet here we are.
Oh, at what point does this team learn how to manage games? We've never had a single game where it's been comfortable when we're one goal down, one goal up, because it feels like this team's always got that moment of shutting down or losing out on transition. And that goal came out of nowhere. They weren't even threatening. I think it was Diego Gomez who lost the ball up front, who made that pass.
Jordi Alba made a pass to Theo Gomez, and
Diego
Gomez couldn't really
Gomez,
handle
who
it.
got pressed, yeah.
Yeah, he couldn't handle it. And then,
And
yeah.
then, so these are the moments when you need to, as a coach, decide when you want to play for the point, when you want to play for the 3 points, when you want to defend, when you want to go forward. Because this team is very, very down on the players available and in terms of options who can change the game. So at some point, you need to contain the scoreline and just sit back and, be more defensively calm and composed. That's the responsibility of the senior players as well. We said the same thing in the last game as well, where we basically mentioned that players like Sergio Busquets, Jordi Alba need to take responsibility and need to ensure that they can compose the players on the pitch, especially the youngsters. We conceded two against Monterrey in the last couple of minutes. We conceded another one against Colorado. And it just seems like this is a trend that's setting into this team and a habit that's really going to be difficult to get out of until we actually fix it, because this is bad. It's a bad habit.
Yeah, on that play in particular, I just want to spend a moment on it because Cole Bassett is a runner out of the midfield and he's an athletic young player. And Sergio Busquets is not going to be able to keep up with him. And so when you're in that moment, in that time of the game with that score line, if you're the two other midfielders, David Ruiz at the time, it was David Ruiz and Diego Gomez, although I don't blame Gomez because he was the one who had, he was part of the play. If you're David Ruiz, but more importantly, if you're Chelo Wiegand, you have to know that Busquets doesn't have this. And so for Chelo specifically, he's got to be a little bit more cautious. He can't be that far forward when the ball's on the other side of the pitch where he can't come back and be helpful defensively, especially at that time of game. I know he's only been here for a week, and so maybe this was the moment where he goes, oh, okay. I have always heard of Sergio Busquets as one of the greatest sixes of all time. I didn't realize that this is a potential threat, and from now on, I will be making sure I cover for it. But it felt like there should have been someone back there to contain the play. And if you really are relying on Sergio Busquets to make that run and stop that runner, this is just going to happen continuously. So, yeah.
And again, I don't necessarily blame the players on the pitch as well. It also depends on the instructions.
Yeah.
Because if Tata tells one player, whether it's Wiegand, whether it's Ruiz, that you need to cover Busquets, you could clearly see Busquets was playing so much better when he had Redondo next to him. That's because Redondo was protecting him. And with Redondo gone, you need to assign that responsibility to somebody, even when he's not, when Redondo's not on the pitch, when he's playing, when there are substitutions in the game, you need to give that responsibility to somebody, whether it's Ruiz, whether it's Wigan, whether it's someone defensive, to just protect Sergio Busquets and track his runners. And it just seems like Tata doesn't doesn't learn from his errors or the games that we've played previously. It just seems to be the same pattern repeated again and again. Because
Well, it also,
that's a weakness that's been exposed so many times now.
yeah, and it also feels like there's a time to go for the third goal, and then there's a time to sit on your
Yeah.
one goal lead. And it's when I say that, I don't mean you have to just sit back and be in a low block and just prevent it, like prevent defense. It's like they
Be
could
less
have,
expansive.
yeah, they could have easily just kicked the ball between the center backs and the full backs and the goalkeeper, and they could have held possession and just sort of eaten the life out of the game. I really feel like from minute 75 to 85, that's what they were doing, and they were picking and probing and trying to create opportunities. But like, if you just don't make those final third passes that are risky to try and create a chance, you can just hold possession and just drain the game away. And it felt like they were continually trying to get that third goal at a time where maybe it felt like maybe they shouldn't have. Maybe they should have been just trying to get that 2-1 victory. Because again, if you give up a goal in the 88th minute, it's really hard to score a goal after that. If you give up a goal in the 76th minute, okay, it's different. You have time. But especially with no substitutes, which again, we'll talk about, it just feels like that was a moment where the players got too confident that they were going to score the third goal and they didn't respect Colorado enough. And that's why I go back to the 85th minute with Sam Vines, where that should have been a wake-up call for Chelo Wigan, for the center backs, for the midfield, where it's like, okay, actually, there's a goal for them in this game left if we aren't careful. And they weren't careful and they gave the goal up. So that was so frustrating because there were so many positives about this game. And to have it end like that, especially after a couple games where we didn't get the result we wanted, it's been so frustrating. And this was just one of those moments where it was so preventable and they just couldn't make it happen. Yeah.
Yeah, my only point to that is we know that Lionel Messi brings this insane energy into this team that completely transforms everyone around him. And he just raises everybody's game around him, which is fantastic to watch. But there's also a case to be made about whether that makes some of these players complacent about whether Messi can just bail them out sometimes. And that forces them to maybe shut down. Or I don't know, it just seems like you're right when you say that they didn't respect Colorado enough, despite signs being there that there was some threat that Colorado was coming at. And yeah, we just fell asleep again at a crucial point in the game. And that cost us two very important points. And this just feels like another one of the Montreal games where we should have clearly won that game and we go home just with a point.
Yeah, we talked about the things that could prevent us from achieving our goals this year, and one of them was just dropping the points in the games you got to win. And this feels like one that we're going to look back on at the end of the season and just really be frustrated with not getting the 3 points. Let's talk about Colorado for a few minutes because I actually think they're a solid team. The guys that they brought in made a positive impact. Georgi Mihailovic, I think we did a good job against, and maybe we can talk about that. But Zach Steffen was an impact player for them tonight or on Saturday night. Sam Vines was an impact player. Moise Bombito, he is good. Oh
He's
my God. Can we
fast.
talk about him for a minute?
Please bring him on Miami. We need him. We genuinely need a defender like him.
Dude, I was thinking I would trade Campana for Bombito, maybe. Like I would genuinely think about
Easily.
that because I not easily because I love Campana, but Bombito is like, wow, that
He's
dude is
fast.
good. He's fast, he's big, he's
He's
strong,
strong.
and he's going to get better every single game. And he's not afraid to take the ball into the midfield. He's not afraid to make line-breaking passes. That's a good player they have. What about Zach Steffen, though? He made some really nice saves in the second half. I mentioned one against Chelo Wigan after Chelo Wigan has the really nice touch off his head, and then a few minutes later, Lionel Messi has a really nice shot to Zach Steffen's right, and Zach Steffen makes a diving stop to prevent that goal. He really was the reason that Inter Miami didn't score that third goal. So I want to give him some credit too. He was really good for them.
Yeah, five saves. I would say he was probably their man of the match. If, I mean, as much of a shout for a man of the match from their side as anybody else. Definitely kept them in the game. Was called upon to do his work in the second half. Didn't have anything to do in the first half as such. So he showed up when he needed to and did a great job. So good for him. Bad for us.
Bad for us. Let's talk about Georgi Mihailovic, because he was the guy we sort of highlighted as their star player. The week before, he had 2 goals against LAFC, a really good game. And we had him going up against a guy who's a center back playing in the midfield, and we actually shut him down. He didn't feel dangerous at all at any point in this game. Maybe he had a set piece where he was, you know, putting the ball into the box, but really, I think we did a really good job on their number 10.
We need to dedicate at least 30 minutes to Toto Aviles, please. Can talk about just him. We'll do an episode about him in the number 6 position separately. But yeah, I thought Mihailovic was fairly quiet, and Bassett had a more influential game than Mihailovic did, which is credit to the number 6, that is Toto Aviles. So well done to him. I don't want to talk too much about him right now, because I'm sure we're going to have a lengthy conversation about him, but definitely.
Okay, yeah, we can save that for awards.
I would say this, the reason that Colorado didn't have too many chances or clear-cut goal opportunities was potentially down to Toto Aviles doing a good job. Otherwise, they could have gotten away in the first half.
Yeah, listen, I'm not making a comparison here. I'm just saying that if Toto Aviles is the 6 for that last 5 minutes of the game, Colbasa doesn't score that goal. I don't know if that makes him better than the greatest 6 of all time. But okay, the last thing I want to talk about with Colorado is sort of the talent disparity, because, and I'll look up their standings in the table right now, but they feel like a solid team that's going to make the playoffs in the West. Maybe fight for a home game. Currently, they're tied for 8th with 9 points, but, you know, just 3 points behind 2nd. They're going to be a team that's in it. They have some nice players. It's a new team, so they're going to get better as the season goes on. And they felt like they came into Chase Stadium and were 5% better in the first half and about 70% worse in the second half. I want this to sort of transition to our conversation about the impact Messi makes, but talk to me about how a team in Inter Miami can go from being a solid to below average MLS team to just lights out with one player. And using Colorado as like this reference point is just made it so clear and obvious.
I'll try and be rational here as much as I can, because I don't know if I can be. But there were signs in the first half itself that Inter Miami was getting into the game a lot more. They were beating the press better. The positioning of the players was a lot better. We were getting the passes off. Julian Gressel was doing a fair few good cross field balls. And it just felt like we were building into the game. So by the time Messi came on, I feel like we were in the perfect position to try and jump off from the good work that we were starting to do in the first half. At least that's how I want to rationalize it. But I think when Messi coming on the pitch, it not just has an impact on our team, it has an impact on the opposition as well. Because you can automatically see that they're less potent in their pressing, because they don't want to give Lionel Messi space in behind. They are dropping off a lot more, which creates a lot more space in the midfield and space for players to play around, which is exactly how Inter Miami likes to play. So having that player of Messi's quality on the ball, plus the aura that he just brings with him, allows the creation of space in the midfield that helps everyone else around him have more time on the ball, take that one touch extra, think a little bit better, position themselves in the right place. So I think it's a contingency factor, which sort of the opposition dropping off plus more space being created plus just the quality that Messi brings, that I think elevates our game a lot more. That's how I want to rationalize it. I'm not sure if you view it in the same manner, but talk to me how you think it works.
I was surprised at how big of a difference he made in this game. And I know that sounds silly because, you know, going back to last season, I knew Lionel Messi was going to come to the MLS and be the best player in the league. But I wasn't sure if he was going to be the best player in the league or if he was going to be the best player in the league by like lapping every other player in the league. And you kind of forget how much better he is than every other player. And it's really, it's like silly. But the players on the field don't, and they react to it. And it's like a psychological impact on both teams. You're right. The thing I saw in this game was, and I don't know if I have to like go back and watch, but it feels like when Messi is on the pitch, or at least in this game, he stays so far forward that it stretches out both teams. And the midfield gets really big and it gets really easy to play through. And the game goes back and forth. And at least that's what it felt like in the second half. And maybe that was because Miami was chasing the game, or they were trying to get the goals, so they were trying to play fast back to front. But I'm wondering if that's like the biggest difference, where it becomes really hard to stay structured for the defense because your attackers want to get forward and your defense has this superstar player just hanging out at the halfway line, not coming back on defense, not giving you a chance to, you know, come back and structure yourself on in transition. And so it gets really nervy for the defense and the midfield, because they're not really sure if they're supposed to get forward or stay back. And it's just like so impactful, and they don't know how to deal with it.
And when he comes into the midfield to collect the ball, that's another danger in itself, because he can practically beat anyone on that pitch. Mm-hmm. So whether you go in 400% into a tackle and leave plenty of space behind you, or whether you keep pushing back and invite that pressure, I think it just plays these tricks on the opposition's mind, where you're caught between the devil and the deep sea, essentially. And it just creates all sorts of structural deficiencies around you. So yeah, this game definitely proved how big of a difference Messi can make. And that makes me a little bit hopeful against Monterrey. Just going to put it out there.
I thought you were going to be very pessimistic this episode. What happened to that? You started thinking about Messi and you got happy?
Yeah.
That's how it works sometimes. Listen, we're going to talk about Messi, I'm sure, in awards. So maybe we can cut it off there. But there was something I was going back to over and over again when I was running through the big moments of the game. And that was the injuries and the substitutes. And I want to talk about how big of an impact they made on this game, because in the 68th minute, we had already made four substitutes because Campana had come off because he got injured. Diego Gomez goes on. Messi comes on halftime for Lawson Sunderland. And then Julian Gressel and Tota Aviles come off in the 55th, 56th minute, and Busquets and Wigan go on. And so on the bench, you have Luis Suarez, you have Kramaski, you have Jordi Alba, and you only have one substitute left for the rest of the game. I don't think that there was any chance that Tata Martino wanted Schneider Borgelin to play as the nine for 90 minutes. And whether that was Campana going off in the first half, because ultimately you would have probably taken Borgelin off for Lionel Messi at halftime if there was no injury to Campana. And then in the 69th minute, when Leo Alfonso goes off the field, you no longer can put on Luis Suarez, and you're sort of stuck with Schneider Borgelin, who is making his second ever start with Inter Miami. He's not a guy that you are relying on to get a game-winning, game-sealing goal. And it felt like that was, looking back on it, the thing that ruined the game for Inter Miami, because they couldn't put on Luis Suarez and they were stuck with Schneider Borgelin, and there was no super dangerous goal scorer in the box. And even if it was Leo Campana, you would have felt better, right? If Campana was in there as the nine and Schneider Borgelin had come off at halftime or whatever, and then you can put on Jordi Alba to kind of create more opportunities, or you can put on Kramaski to get minutes in the midfield, whatever it is. It just felt like they didn't have a goal scoring threat outside of, or as that number nine, when you really could have used one late in the game. How big of a moment was that to you, and how much of a difference did that make?
Yeah, those two injuries really played a role in how we wanted to, or how we reacted to the game. Obviously, you've pointed out everything else that I would have said as well, in terms of the substitutions, in terms of the injuries. I think at this point in the season, with the number of injuries that this team is nursing, we're going to have to contend with all of this. It was just a shame that our hands were tied and we didn't have much of a or Tata didn't have much of a choice in terms of who he brings on to try and change the game. I thought Bojlin had a decent game, but not a fabulous game-changing game by any means. I thought he was okay. But overall, it was just a shame that the game didn't go the way we wanted it to.
It's no insult to Schneider Bojlin to say he's not Luis Suarez. You know?
Yeah, like
it's just not. So when you have Suarez available off the bench and you don't have the ability to bring him in when you really need a goal, is frustrating. And it's not like Bojlin provides a lot defensively either. So, you know, or in hold up play or something where he would help you kill the game either. So,
and it would have been the first game in what, 5 games that Luis Suarez, Jordi Alba, and Messi were on the same, or even Luis Suarez and Messi were on the same pitch together. It's been a while since we've seen that connection combined.
See, now you're
together,
getting me excited for Wednesday night.
No, I didn't mean it that way. I meant it in terms of this is what happens when you have injuries. You need to have contingencies in place. And it just seems like at this point in time, our contingencies are not the best. And we're going to have to react fairly average.
The frustrating part about it was there was nothing you could do about it. Like,
exactly.
You had to take Campana off. You had to make the first sub. You had to bring on Messi at halftime if that was the plan for him to go 45. And then you had to take Gressel and Aviles off in the 55th minute because you didn't want to risk them not being at full strength for Wednesday night. And so once Afonso goes down, you have no choice. And it's just so frustrating because it felt like we were doing everything right. Let's switch to some of the positives about this game from the team's perspective. They did get the rotation that they wanted. Alba gets half a game. Gressel gets half a game. Aviles gets half a game. Gomez gets half a game. Messi gets half a game. Busquets gets half a game. Wigan gets half a game. Gomez gets half a game. And then the guys that went 90, Noah Allen, Ryan Saylor, Franco Negri, Schneider Bojlin, they weren't the guys that you needed to go. David Ruiz. Those are the guys that you could not use Wednesday and probably won't use Wednesday, you know, other than Drake Callender. So you have to feel good coming out of this game, at least for what it means going forward. And you have to feel like our main mission was to not get injured, but to have good rotation through this game so everyone's fresh for Wednesday. That feels like mission accomplished.
I wouldn't say mission accomplished, but mission half completed. Rest of it was just left out into the woods. I'm back to my pessimistic self. There were a lot of positives, I think. Even before Messi came on, I liked the team's reaction. As I said, the first half, after the first 20 minutes where we got dominated by the press and found it difficult to control the game, I think Negri had a really good game after that. He started to get back into the groove. He looked good. I'm sure we're going to talk about him. David Ruiz as well. We were building on slowly and steadily. And then obviously we gave away that penalty. So the fact that the team had a bit of a reaction in that first half, despite being so poor in the first 20 minutes, was a positive. The fact that our gameplay elevated so much when Messi came on means that there are gears to this team that we haven't seen with Messi in this team like so far because he's been injured. And hopefully once he gets back to full health, once he plays more games consistently, we're going to start racking up those points. Shame that we need him to win those games, but that's the reality of this team at this point in time. And then third, as you mentioned, we got the rotation that we needed and some of the youngsters got a run out as well. Afonso got a goal, which was great. So a fair few positives.
Yeah, and we'll talk about more positives when we get into awards, but there's one other main positive I wanted to talk about, and that was from the 69th minute on, so for 21, 25 minutes or so, you had Noah Allen, Franco Negri, and Jordi Alba all on the field together. That was something during the offseason we were really curious about because they all seemed like three left backs that didn't have a lot of flexibility. And yet here we are not just getting two of them to coexist, but to get all three of them to coexist on the field together. To me, that's a big positive because you now have some real flexibility with those three.
Yeah, but I don't think we're going to see that too often this season. It's good to have those three options. I think Negri showed that he's still got levels to his game,
Yeah, I don't mean
but
all three at the same time, but that
yeah.
all three can coexist on the field together, so that any two should be able to coexist on the field together, I guess is
Yeah,
my point.
that's definitely a positive. I like that point that you make, that in case we need to play a makeshift left winger for the last 5 minutes of the 10 minutes of the game, we can bring Jordi Alba on or Franco Negri on, and we'll have enough cover in that position. The left back position, once Negri came back, we knew it wasn't going to be an issue. So hopefully they don't sell him anytime soon, or if they do sell him, they bring someone who's insanely good in defense, because that's the area that we need to improve.
Yeah, I've thought that Franco Negri might be a trade chip during the summer at some point. But now that I've seen him play again, I would be really sad if we traded him because I forgot how much I like Franco Negri. Let's talk about the standings. Inter Miami now sitting on 12 points.
Third.
They're in third place in the East, 12 points, 2 points behind the Red Bulls, even on points with Columbus, Cincinnati, and Philadelphia. Only 2 points ahead of Atlanta, Toronto, and DC. If everyone wins their games in hand, which I know is not possible, but there's like nine teams that could jump, or eight teams plus New York, who's already ahead of them, that could jump into Miami if they win their games in hand. Talk to me about the standings.
It's not as good as it looks. It's pretty
I don't think it
bleak.
looks that good. I don't
It
think it looks
is.
very good.
It's pretty bleak. Before the game, before they scored their goal, we were top of the league. And once they scored that goal to draw the game, we're essentially sitting third, but could be pushed down to seventh or eighth if everyone wins their games in hand. And that's a really bad place to be at the start of the season after what, 7 games, 8 games? I don't think we've started the season off well at all. And this is like a obviously a false positive, the position that's on the table right now. But it could get really, really bad, especially if we lose that game to Monterrey. This would be one of the worst starts to the season that we could have possibly imagined.
Yeah, this feels like 2 points dropped Saturday night. The previous week against NYCFC, that feels like 2 points dropped. Going back to the Montreal game, that feels like 3 points dropped. So you're talking about 7 points that would take us to 19 and we look great. Even that New York Red Bull game, I mean, not that we deserved anything from that game, but at least going into the game, you felt like a road draw against a team missing a lot of their best players is definitely possible. It feels like we are way behind schedule. And it's all been recently. I will say that DC United game looks a lot better than it did at the time. They're a solid team. But yeah, we got off to a really hot start. And then the last 4 games, it's been blown out at NY at the Red Bulls, a 1-1 draw at home versus NYCFC, the Monterrey loss in the midweek, and then this draw where we had it, and we just couldn't close it out. So I agree with you, man. Back to bad times, bad vibes. And if we lose against Monterrey on Wednesday, it's going to feel like it was all for nothing. Of course, if we win against Monterrey on Wednesday, it's going to feel like, who cares? We're on schedule. We're on track.
Yeah, this whole vibe could very easily turn even more sour or absolutely amazing based on how the game goes on Wednesday.
Okay, let's get into our individual awards. This is six total awards from the two of us. We're going to give the Man of the Match for Miami award, the Heron That Flew North award, which is our award for the player doing the wrong thing, and then two individual awards each that we either make up on the spot or, like me, you came prepared today. And,
I didn't come prepared today.
they are going to be our opportunity to talk about some of the players individually. This week, or at least this game, the man of the match goes to Soar. Let's hear what you got, man.
There are a couple of players that I can actually pick. I think there were a few who had a really good game or who didn't put too much of a foot wrong. But for me, I think, especially after the game that he had last time around against Monterrey, it goes to David Ruiz.
Okay.
I think it's a decent shout. If you look at his
It's the
stats,
wrong answer, but okay.
no, it's not the wrong answer, because there are a fair few that you can you can name Negri, perhaps. You can, you know, obviously Messi scored that goal, so obviously he could be the man of the match contender. But David Ruiz had an assist. His influence in the game grew a lot more as the game progressed. He had some really good tackles in the first half. He built on from the first two brainwashed tackles that he did. After that, he was really good in getting the ball recovery. He didn't have great passing, but overall, I think he had a really good game from that right back position. And you know I don't like him in that position, but I thought he had a good game. And even when you look at his stats, he has a 7.9 overall rating, some really good interceptions, tackles, one assist, 72 touches on the ball, one key pass, two long balls. Yeah, I think he did well. 8 tackles, 3 interceptions. I think he had a good game. And he was all over the pitch at one point. So I noticed him as a standout player, and especially after the game that he had against Monterrey, I think he needed to prove that he could do better. So for me, he's the man of the match.
Okay. I mean, I hear what you're saying. He did make MLS Team of the Week. So, you know, some of the underlying statistics really liked him. The analytics liked what he did. He did go from right back into the midfield and played well in the midfield. I thought he did really well in the midfield, other than maybe tracking back. I'd have to go back and watch that second goal for Colorado and see where he was or if he could have done anything, but gets an assist. Yeah, so I hear what you're saying. not who I would have given it to. Probably not one of the first three guys I would have given it to. I think you have to give it to the guy who changes the game at halftime and he comes on and has the biggest impact. But
yeah, but that's such an easy answer, though. I don't want to go with Lionel Messi every single time. He would be the best player on the pitch every single time.
The creative awards are second. First, we got to do the real man of the match. But okay, David Ruiz. Anything else about his performance? I mean, he was solid, played two positions. He was going to go 90 no matter what because he's not going to be eligible for Wednesday's game. I thought he had those two shaky moments. He had those two shaky, scary moments in the first 10 minutes. But other than that, yeah, he was good. Solid. Good performance.
Yep. All right, your turn.
Okay, our second award is the Heron That Flew North. And I'm going to give it to Ryan Saylor. I think this is the right answer. He gives up a penalty for really no reason. He goes to ground when there's no reason to. He's been solid the last couple games, and he was solid in this game outside of that. But I mean, you give up a goal and the game ends in a draw, and it was a silly penalty to give
he
up.
He literally flew north. He went in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say. With you. I would have given it to him as well. Unfortunate, because I don't think he put too much of a foot wrong that entire game. Of course, he's not. Other than that two-footed wild tackle. But he was okay in defense again. I think he was doing fine. He's obviously not our first choice, second choice, or third choice centre-back. So he's plugging in and doing a role. But I agree with your choice. He sort of changed the game and not in our favour. So unfortunate.
Just to put this out there, he didn't play in any of Inter Miami's first 7 games. He's played in each of the last 4, and these are the 4 games that we've thought haven't really gone so well. So
don't make him the scapegoat, man. Don't make him the scapegoat. Come on.
Listen, I thought he was good in the Red Bull. I thought he's been decent, but you know.
Yeah, he's been decent. Just putting those things together. We don't need to talk more about him. He's been decent. And he had that brain dead tackle in the penalty box for no reason. Let's move on.
Okay, let's get to your first award, because you really threw me off by not giving Messi that first, the man of the match. So now that he's eligible for awards, I'm going to guess Lionel Messi. Now tell me, what's the award called?
No, I don't have Messi on any of the awards. I consciously chose not to have him on any of my awards because I think it's unfair to the rest of the players who've been doing a job while he's been away recovering. So I would only give him that award when he goes and scores a hat trick against Monterrey. That's it. All right. I've got a fair few good ones. So I'm trying to think which one I want to go for.
And none of them are Lionel Messi either, because I just assumed you were going to take him for man of the match.
No, that's fine. We don't need to talk about Lionel Messi.
I think we do.
I'm gonna talk. I'm I want gonna go to. with I'm gonna go with my favorite one, I think, which is "Blow the Whistle Now, Ref."
Blow the whistle now, ref. That obviously goes to Franco Negri. I have no idea.
Yeah, I know. You're trying to manifest these awards, which is not how it works, my friend. This award goes to Toto Aviles because he found himself stuck in the middle of the forest with no camping equipment, with no survival equipment. He was stuck in that number six position where we all thought he was going to absolutely crumble, and he was doing such a good job that he was literally shouting at the ref, "Please blow the whistle and end this game now, because another minute and I'm probably going to mess this up." So I think this award goes to Toto Aviles for surviving those 60 minutes that he was on the pitch, or however many minutes he played on that pitch.
Yeah. Listen, we were very nervous about Toto Aviles in the
Very
midfield
nervous.
in the pregame, and he was solid. He was a little nervous in the first 15 minutes, but as Inter Miami sort of got control of the game and started to feel like they were actually in it, he felt more comfortable. A lot of the things that he does well from a center back position translated well to the
Yeah,
midfield.
I
And
agree.
so, listen, he's not great in tight spaces and he's not good at getting around defenders and, getting through the press. But he didn't feel like he got himself in that many situations where that was a problem. And he's still good at progressing the ball. He's still got a really nice long pass on him. He can break lines. And listen, he was feeling himself. He took some really long shots at one point. So, yeah, don't dive into this.
I think he had a really good
Remind me,
game.
what is this award called? Blow the whistle, ref.
Yes, blow the whistle, ref, exclamation mark.
Okay.
Do not miss the exclamation mark. I think he had a really good game, specifically because we know that he's not the kind of number six who's going to control the game. He doesn't have that in him to beat the press, pass the ball around, and progress the ball in tight spaces. And that's where Colorado capitalized on in the first 20 minutes specifically, because we were turning over the ball in the midfield quite a lot. We weren't getting hold of the game at all. And him being in that number six position was definitely responsible for that, because we need someone who's able to dictate the tempo and keep hold of the ball. But on the other side of things, he didn't necessarily position himself wrong defensively that allowed the other team to counter us. And he didn't have that much of an impact on the defensive front negatively. I mean, he had much of a more positive impact defensively. And I agree with you. I think the fact that he's a center back allowed him to play that defensive aspect of the defensive midfielder role a lot better. And when there was a little bit of space, he was a lot more comfortable, and Inter Miami looked a lot better because then he was able to pass the ball into Gressel, who was able to progress it further, and he was just able to pop it out around a lot more. So kudos to him. He got put into the deep end and he didn't necessarily drown. So good for him.
Yeah, let's never do that again though.
Yes, please.
I'm a little
So
lost
you
now
mean to say we're
because
not playing him in the defensive midfield position against Monterrey?
listen, if he's next to Busquets, man, well maybe Busquets will be at center back and he'll be the six.
What if Tata actually does that? Jeez, that would
Stop,
be a
stop. We're not going to speak that into
mind-blowing.
existence.
Oh my goodness.
I'm a little lost though because I have four awards for four players that we haven't talked about, and I feel weird that Lionel Messi hasn't gotten an award yet. So I don't know where to go with this.
Do you want me to give Lionel Messi an award?
That would make my life easier, yes.
We
But
can give him the Ba Award, which is the greatest of all time.
before you do, I'm giving the Manning 2012 award.
Aha. I'm not a big American football fan. I'm not sure how this works, but I know that's the reference, right? Is it Eli Manning or is it his brother?
It's Peyton Manning.
Peyton Manning. Okay. Was Eli Manning in person?
Yeah, they're both
Okay.
quarterbacks. Oh my
Thank
God.
God. Okay, I didn't Hey, this is a football podcast. This is by no means an American football podcast. So, excuse my lack of knowledge about American football.
Don't worry, I'll
That
edit
being
all of this
said,
out. I'll edit all of this out.
my understanding of this is live, my friend. My understanding of this award is that Peyton
Cut the tape.
Manning, the big quarterback, led his team to the Super Bowl in 2012. It has to be Lionel Messi, right?
It's not.
Oh my God.
I'll explain. And seeing what you know about the Manning brothers now, it's clear to me you were never going to get this. Peyton Manning was the longtime starting quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts, one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, multi-time MVP, superstar, one of the faces of the league. Him and Tom Brady were like the rivalry among quarterbacks. And in 2011, he hurts his neck and he misses the entire season. He's like 34 at this time. People are like, okay, well, he was great. His neck's not going to get better. His time has passed. The Indianapolis Colts, that had so much success with him, moved him on. And everyone was like, okay, this is the end of Peyton Manning. But in 2012, he came back from injury and he said, guys, I'm back. And he made a really big impact, which is why led his team to the Super Bowl. Had 55 touchdowns, NFL record. Superstar again, best quarterback in the NFL. Maybe all those last things don't apply, but coming
This is
back from
definitely
injury
Franco Negri.
and having an impact, Franco Negri gets the Manning 2012 award.
I had a similar award for him, but I think mine was better. I called it the Dark Knight Rises Award because he emerged from the depths of that pit of injury and came back a stronger man. So I think
Save that
mine
for
was
Ian
better.
Frey or Kromaski.
Yeah, potentially. I agree
Dude, he
with you,
was really
man.
good.
I think he had a great game. Started off a little bit shaky. I think he was still finding his feet, but that was the entire team at that point. Wasn't afraid to go into a tackle, still has the speed. I think he had some really good offensive actions as well. Overall, we're very happy with the way he's come back.
I'm thinking about last year, and we had Campana and we had Joseph Martinez making runs into the box, but Martinez didn't really make runs in the box, and he would just let the ball go through his legs, trying to do a dink and dunk all the time. And maybe Kramaski running out of the midfield sometimes, but Franco Negri didn't have anyone to cross the ball to last year, like as I'm thinking about it. And he's got a wicked cross, man.
Yeah.
It's hard and low. And when you have Lionel Messi and Luis Suarez making those runs and creating space, it's nice, man. Listen, he's not Jordi Alba. He's never going to be Jordi Alba. But for this league, he is a really good left back. And to have that type of player on the bench at his salary is just like incredible. And to see, and he's back, like healthy, and he looks as good as he ever did. So I'm really, really happy for Franco Negri. And I would be really sad if we moved him off the roster, honestly.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Absolutely nothing to add there. I agree that the crossball that he did, I think it was to Gressel in the first half. It was low and hard and through the midfield, and then it went to Bojlin, and that's where the attack died. But some of the stuff that he did in the first half was a really good way to get out of the pressure, and he helps the offensive transitions quite a bit, and I really like that side of him. In this game, hopefully he stays fit.
Can I stop you for a second?
Yep.
I'm going back to when we did a ranking of the top 20 players in Inter Miami. I'm just trying to pull it up, but
Oh no.
I just want to see where we ranked him. Here we go. We ranked him number 16 behind Nico Freire, right between Freire and Christoph. Is that where you would put him today with those center
16
backs? Well, right in between those two center backs, Christoph
with
and
that one performance. Based on that one performance, I think he's better than both Christoph and Ferry.
Yeah, he's a guy that's going to be a climber, I think. So we'll do that again someday. But he's, that was like where our expectations for him were, to be like a solid MLS type starter that can start games for you and you'll feel comfortable with him. But I think I was worried that like I was overrating him because he was a standout player last year on a really bad team, and that maybe his talent actually wasn't going to stand up to this level once our eyes got adjusted to all the talent we have now. But dude, he fits in.
Completely agree with you. And I think that list is going to change quite a bit when we redo it in a few months.
I also want to just say, like, he tore his ACL, I think in May last year, and maybe 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, it announced that we get Lionel Messi, and he probably was scared for the last 9 months that he was never going to be able to take the field with Lionel Messi. And like, this has got to be a dream for him, dude. Honestly.
100%. And long may that continue. Hopefully he plays a few more games.
Okay, what's your next award?
I'm confused because there's a couple of players that we need to cover first. And I haven't...
I know. I got a bunch of awards left. We can go for a few extra if we want.
Let's talk about the pawn promoted to a knight award.
The pawn promoted to a knight award. This is Leo Alfonso.
Yeah. You got it. You finally got one.
I feel like I get one every game, every show.
No, you don't.
Yeah, dude. I have an award for him too, but I think this is better. So talk to me about Leo Alfonso.
He is a soldier. He's a pawn. He's an added piece into this 30-man roster. We've included him as a bench option, as somebody who can potentially make an impact off the bench when things are getting slow, the other team has tired legs, and we need someone quick, pacey, dynamic to get on the ball and make a difference. That's his role in this team. This game, he had to play a different role where he had to start and he had to contribute from the first minute off. He scored a goal. This is his first full debut. Oh no, second.
His first start.
First start. So he scored a goal in his first start. That promotes him to a knight. I think he's going to be a really big player going forward. We talked about this at the start of the podcast that our academy is producing some really, really good talents. And he is definitely an exciting prospect who I personally wasn't really looking, I wasn't looking out for him as such. I wasn't too elated about him being promoted into the first 30-man roster. So him being there and now contributing with goals, I think he has a lot of potential. And we've seen the progress that someone like Benjamin Kramaski, Diego Gomez, David Ruiz, some of these players have made. And hopefully he goes on that trajectory as well, because he has all the tools. He just needs to be honed in the right manner. And hopefully Tata can get the best out of him in this season.
Yeah, there's a lot I want to say about Leo Alfonso. Inter Miami took him in the second round of the Super Draft last December, and he actually came out of the Inter Miami Academy before he went to college, so we can still give the Academy some credit, but this is a college product. Second round pick, 32nd overall. No Inter Miami draft pick that wasn't a first round pick has ever appeared for the club, ever. The exception, the only other one is Pep Casas, who we saw over the last couple weeks. But, and Leo Alfonso has come, like, that's, I'm saying that to give you guys an idea of like the level of player that is coming out of the Super Draft in the second round. Very few of them ever even play a single minute in the MLS. And this kid looks like he is just another one of these young, dynamic players that has a real potential to be a really solid MLS player. I wasn't bought in on that first game. We played against the New York Red Bulls and he came off the bench and we lost 4-0 and he looked fine. He looked solid, but like everyone looked so bad that I thought his performance stood out, but that it actually was only okay. And then he played against NYCFC and he was only okay, but he came in against Monterrey and looked like he belonged. And then in this game, he gets the start and he absolutely looked like he belonged. It's a shame he got hurt because I think him leaving him leaving the field had a really negative impact on Inter Miami. He is quick, athletic, works hard. And those are the types of things that gets a young winger on the pitch. But he's also not super turnover prone. He's not a headless chicken. We saw that he has at least a goal in his game. So I'm really, really excited about this player. We got 4 goals in for the B team in 2 games. Like, he's one of the 30. And the next time we rank our top 20, he might make the list. So
let's hope so. Because he has, again, as I said, he has all the tools to do that, and very promising signs from him.
I do want to talk about the Super Draft for a second, because Inter Miami, the Super Draft picks that they've ever had, Robbie Robinson was their first ever Super Draft pick, first overall, the year they were founded, and he's played significant minutes for Inter Miami. But the other guys that have made any sort of impact are Amy Mbika, who had a solid role in that 2022 year when we made the playoffs down the stretch as a starter. But other than that, Ryan Saylor, who, you know, we're seeing the type of impact he's having, that was their number 9 overall pick. That's like the type of player you'd expect to get out of the Super Draft. And both Yannick Bright and Leo Alfonso look like guys that are going to surpass that. And so I just want to give a shout out to Chris Henderson and the scouting department for going at this Super Draft with the expectation to get impact players and doing it. And Pep Casas was also in this draft, who's already made his debut. So yeah, congratulations to all 3 of those guys, but Leo Alfonso, big impact, really proud of him.
All right, your turn.
So many to go. I'm going to stick to the football theme. I'm going to stick to the Manning theme, and I'm going to give the Eli Manning Award.
You know I'm never going to get these.
Yeah, I know. I liked watching you squirm for that first one.
Eli Manning. Okay, explain the award to me.
The Eli Manning Award is, listen, he's not Peyton Manning, but he's still pretty good. And when you get him on the field, you can feel comfortable that Eli Manning is your guy. He's in charge of your offense, and that you're still going to be competent, solid, and every once in a while, you might just win some big games with him. And I will say, based on how you've spoken in this podcast, I don't think you're going to guess this one.
Julian Gressel.
It is Julian Gressel. He started in the midfield today, and he only played 56 minutes, but he was the guy that we've talked about for the last 4 months now, that he could be for this team, where we expected it to come, or at least I expected it to come from the right wing when Lionel Messi wasn't playing and he was asked to run the offense. But tonight, for between minute 15 and 40 for the rest of the first half, he was the engine of the offense in a way we haven't seen yet. And everything good Inter Miami did in that first half ran through Julian Gressel. I can absolutely see how, if he has that role every game, week in, week out, for a team that doesn't have Lionel Messi and all these guys, he would look like an impact star level player in this league. And this was the first time I really saw, for like a sustained period of time, him run the offense. And I liked it. Especially in a rotated side like this.
I personally prefer him in the right wing position a bit more. I think he's a little slower on the midfield side. And obviously in the first half, he wasn't playing next to Sergio Busquets, so he was fine in that position. But when he plays next to Sergio Busquets, I just don't think he has that same level of impact.
I agree.
But yeah, I agree with you. I think, as we mentioned multiple times already, after the first 20 minutes, once everyone got their feet, he was a big reason why we were beating that press. He was finding those cross-field passes. He was being press-resistant. He was making the offense run. He was sticking the ball around. So I completely agree with you. He's definitely growing into this side. And he might not be spectacular in what he does, but he just does these underrated things that keeps the machine going. And that's so important for a team to have such a player like that. So I completely agree with you. And I think on Wednesday, he's going to have a big role, even with Messi back. He's going to have a big role in ensuring
what. Does he remind you of Eli Manning now that we've talked about it?
Oh, yeah, 100%. He for me, Julian Gressel is the second coming of Eli Manning.
And obviously Messi is Peyton Manning, and Eli Manning is not Peyton Manning, but
of course.
Julian Gressel
Eli Manning was a golfer, right?
Oh, God.
Anyways, I know he wasn't a golfer, guys. I just kid.
Okay, those are our six awards, but it feels like there's some other guys that deserve a little bit of talk. I want to talk about Noah Allen for a second because I had an award prepared for him, and it was the Just Keep Swimming Award, and that was for, listen, he didn't have a great game. He's learning a new position. He's never been a center back until Tata Martino threw him back there late last season. He's going to struggle, but he's going to get better for it. In every game he's out there, and every minute he's out there, and every time that he gets beat by a defender, every time that he gets in the wrong position or whatever, he's going to go back, watch the game film, and improve. And so I just want to say to Noah Allen, you're going to be fine. Just keep pushing through. I know there's going to be some bad moments, but you'll be fine. You'll be better for it. And just keep swimming.
Yeah, I just hope for his sake, I wish we'd won this game because that would have done a load of confidence to a load of it would have done great stuff for his confidence. And we always talk about setting the players up for success. And I feel like with the team that was set up around him, he wasn't necessarily set up for the best of success by Tata Martino there. Obviously, having Ryan Saylor doesn't necessarily give you a lot of confidence when he's next to you. So I'm sure he's going to grow into it, but I agree, these kind of games are the ones where he's going to learn a lot from and only improve. And I think Tata trusts him. There's definitely a player there. So I'm hoping he just gets better. And I agree with you. Just keep swimming, keep learning from these games, and keep trying to get yourself a position.
Anything on Drake Callender, Schneider Bergelin, Sergio Busquets? These are
I
sort of
actually
some of the
had
other
an
names.
award for Schneider Bojalan. It was the Leo Campana award.
Oh my
Because
God.
I think with Leo Campana out, Schneider Bojalan might actually have a bigger role to play in this
Dude,
team than we
Campana's gonna
think.
be fine. Campana's gonna be fine.
I hope so.
He's gonna he's
Are
not gonna
you
start on Wednesday, but he's gonna be healthy for Wednesday.
is that you coping with
No, no, no,
the
dude.
fact
He
that you walked off in
walked off
game?
the field. They saw him after the game. He's probably been dealing with a hamstring. He just pulled it a little, and he doesn't want to risk it. He's gonna be fine though.
I really hope so because we're
And
going to need
if we
Campana.
see Schneider Borjan against Monterrey on Wednesday, I'm not gonna feel great.
I'm probably going to bang my head against this table, but we'll see.
Sergio Busquets, he couldn't make that run. We talked about it when we talked about the goal. I don't know if there was anything else super noteworthy about him.
I think the only thing we need to make sure from now on is that the best you get out of Sergio Busquets is when you have protection next to him. And as of now, with the players that are out, with Yannick Wright out, with Redondo out, he's going to have a few moments in game where we're going to be tearing our hair out and asking for someone to cover for him. But that's just the way this team has been constructed. And we've got to deal with the positives as well as the negatives of Sergio Busquets. So it is what it
Yeah, and
is.
if you're Deo Gomez and David Ruiz, you got to be paying attention to that. And one
Yeah.
of you has to be his protection, because they like to both get forward. But Sergio Busquets is better at getting forward than both of you. So, like this isn't a thing. Go play defense. Drake Callender, man, it
Always has
feels
that
like.
one save that saves us.
He feels like he should have like four or five clean sheets already this season, and he just doesn't, and he hasn't had one, and maybe since the third game, since the Orlando City 5-0 game. And I just feel bad because he just needs a little bit of help, and he would just be running away with all these goalkeeping stats. But I don't know.
Yeah, I just wish we'd signed that one defender that could really transform this back line,
Yeah,
but
let's go get Bombito. Let's go trade for him.
let's
If
start a
only it was that
GoFundMe
easy.
page for him.
Yeah. Anyone else you want to talk about? Because I want to spend a few minutes talking about this Monterrey game, but any other
I
players
think
from
it's
this
time.
game? You ready?
I think it's time we talk about Monterey.
Let's put that game in the past. It's Monday night. We are, I think, 48 hours away from kickoff, almost exactly now. How are you feeling?
I hate myself for saying this, but I have that glimmer of hope that Lionel Messi, for the last time, pulls out of rabbit out of his bag and just takes us across that finish line.
He changes everything. I was I
Everything.
if we didn't give up that second goal at the end of this game, we would be talking so positively about this team. We would have so much excitement, so much enthusiasm. We would feel like we can go down to Monterrey and win that game 3-1 and advance. And it was bad vibes at the end, but it was so fun and special for the first 40 minutes he was on the field. He changes everything, dude. He really does. He changes everything. And 90% of it is psychological. And maybe I'm crazy. And 70% of that is just me being psychological. But it's crazy, dude.
Yeah, the only issue I have is with him on the pitch as well, despite the fact that we were playing so well, we still conceded. That's a big weakness. I know the defense is not going to be the same against Monterrey, but Monterrey is not going to be Colorado either. So I'm just wondering whether Lionel Messi is going to be enough of a difference. Yeah, I hope I eat my words and he is.
We're not going to win that game 1-2, 2-0 or 2-1.
Yeah.
We're going to have to score 3 goals, but we can. Dude, this game we had, you know, Messi came on and made a huge impact, but Alba was only on for 20 minutes. Luis Suarez didn't play. Robert Taylor didn't play, although he doesn't sound like he's going to be available for Wednesday. Sergio Busquets only played half an hour. Marcelo Wiegand didn't play more than 35 minutes. We didn't have our 2 starting center backs that we'll have on Wednesday. And it feels like this time we'll actually have impact players to bring off the bench. Hopefully Campana is ready to go. Kramaski should be ready to go. Franco Negri ready to go. Let me ask you a question. Are we going to get Franco Negri starting Wednesday night with Jordi Alba as a left winger? Because there is no Robert Taylor.
I want to see that. Can you imagine the Luis Suarez, Messi, and Alba combination? And that, oh, that's going to be so spicy, man.
Dude, they're not going to start Leo Alfonso in that game, right?
I hope not.
And I don't think Robert Taylor's healthy.
I think, as he was saying this, I was thinking to myself, bring me both Negri and Jordi Alba, because that's going to be spicy. He's going to give us some defensive cover, and Jordi Alba is absolutely going to boss that left wing spot. Let's see what happens. We're so done out. We're losing 4-0, aren't we?
Let's talk about the lineup. No, because you're absolutely right. With Messi, we can score as many goals as we need to. Like, that's the thing. We can score as many goals as we need to with Messi on the field. But we'll also be more susceptible than we were on last Wednesday to Monterrey scoring goals. So it could easily be 3-1 Miami, but you could easily see it being 3-1 Monterrey. So I'm nervous. Who do you think is going to start?
I think it's going to be Suarez up top, Alfonso on the left wing, Messi on the right wing, Gresso, Busquets, Diego Gomez, and then the back line of Alba, Freire, Aviles, and Wigan.
And calendar. Can you imagine Leo Alfonso? He might not be ready. We don't know what's going on with his injury, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I forgot he was injured. Yep.
I know. You think we're going to get... because David Ruiz is suspended. I don't know. I'm going to see who's actually available.
We're getting Negri and Alba, aren't we? We're getting Negri and Alba.
It feels like... were they really that bad? I mean... I don't know. Who else do they even have? Nobody. Are they going to win?
I would do that. I would stop them, man. Just go gung-ho. Just go.
Are Inter Miami going to win?
Yeah, go on.
All right, guys.
Might as well.
We'll be back with the pregame show in the hour before kickoff. Sora and I always get so nervous, and the TV channels never do a good enough job of providing that pregame coverage that we need to satisfy our nerves and our energy. And as soon as the lineup comes out, we'll be live both here, wherever you're watching this, we'll be live. So please come join us. Get in the comment section on YouTube. We really love that. And other than that, until next time, I'm Scotty. This is Soar. And this was the Dry Pink Dialogue. Have a good night, everyone.